This is for Wednesday, June 6, 2007, and I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 420. Senator Gordley, did you want to come forward? And I understand you have a couple of people that will testify after you.
We do, and thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I do have
And Senator Gordley, although I've often, when testifying, forget this, I know that you never would. Would you please identify yourself for the record?
For the record, Mr. Chair, I'm Avell Gordley, representing Senate District 23 in Multnomah County. And I want to begin, Mr. Chairman, by thanking you, thanking Senator Avakian, and thanking Representative Dingfelder, particularly for championing this measure and for ensuring that we are having this hearing this morning on the bill. And I am also hoping to count on your support for a work session this morning. I'm not going to read the testimony that's being handed out to you. I will tell you that what that testimony does is lay out the history of how we have attempted to deal with environmental justice issues in the state of Oregon going back to 1991. Working with my office, first as a state representative, working with Governor Barbara Roberts, who established an environmental justice task force by executive order at the request of my office, and then with the Kitzhaber administration, who also established an executive order on environmental justice, also at the request of my office. We are very fortunate to have back with us this morning, and back for a third time is supposed to be a charm, two leading experts, and there are others in the room who wish to speak to the issue. But I'm speaking of Robin Morris Collins, law professor at Willamette University, and also Robert Collins, senior scholar at Willamette University Center for Public Policy and adjunct law professor. They will both lay out the case for why this work is important and why this work is important to go forward in statute. I was going to allow you to have your conversation. What we know is that the Environmental Protection Agency concluded in a 1992 report that racial and ethnic minorities were disproportionately subjected to exposures to air pollutants, hazardous waste facilities, contaminated fish, and agricultural pesticides, and that African-American children were disproportionately subject to high blood lead levels and to the accompanying adverse health effects. At that time, a National Law Journal investigation also found racial disparities in the enforcement of federal environmental laws. One of the features of the measure in front of you is focused on public participation in the discussion of environmental issues and in the making of environmental public policy. We know that traditionally environmental decision makers have heard the views of industry giants, conventional environmental organizations, state and local governments, and federal land managers, but not always from people who actually live in the most affected areas. And this is an opportunity to address that piece through this measure. My interest in environmental justice started back in 1990-91. I was invited to participate in the United Nations Conference on Environmental Justice at the United Nations. Came back to my own local community and started to work with others in the community who were concerned about contaminated fish in the Columbia Slough who were concerned about air pollution in the I-5, I-84 corridor and its effects on surrounding neighborhoods. And there are a whole host of other issues that we addressed as a local community. I'm going to move off stage and ask our two experts to come forward and to help me again make the case for why this is good public policy. And in fact, this is policy that helps Oregon catch up to where much of the rest of the nation is in addressing these issues at this level. Thank you once again for hearing the bill, and I do hope that we're going to move to work session today.
Thank you, Senator Wardley. Would this be Ms. Holm? Mr. Holm?
Holm. Good morning, chairs and members of the committee. My name is Robin Morris Collin. I'm a professor of law at Willamette University College of Law. I was formerly at the University of Oregon, and I have been in Oregon since 1993. I'm also a member of the Oregon State Bar. I currently serve on a task force to study the role of the Oregon legal profession in the sustainability movement. I was the first law professor to teach a course on sustainability in an American law school. And I am a founding member of the Environmental Justice Action Group of Portland. I'm here to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 420, which I see as situating at the confluence of environmental justice and sustainable communities. And I would like to address a few remarks to that point this morning. In Oregon, as Senator Gordley has mentioned, we have an authentically Oregonian basis for engaging the challenges of environmental justice. The citizens of our state have partnered with our government through task forces since 1991 to establish exactly the terms of the environmental justice challenges in our state. There is a report in 1994, as Senator Gordley mentioned, and 1998 under Governor Kitzhaber, reporting on environmental inequity issues throughout all of our communities throughout the state. And those commissions did take time to study a variety of communities, rural communities, urban communities, coastal communities, agricultural-based communities, to begin to deal with the specifics of the challenges that are facing different Oregonian communities. Over the years from 1994, which was the date of the first environmental equity report, till now, we've established a very firm, logical basis for legislative attention to the impacts and the consequences on environmental inequities to our communities throughout our state. These prior task forces have documented the basis for our activities. Senate Bill 420 is also based on another distinctly Oregonian virtue, and that is our commitment to open and accountable public processes. In our state, the people of our state expect to be able to know and able to participate in the kinds of policy making that affects their lives. Oregon has set the pace in terms of accountable public processes in many other areas. Senate Bill 420 would continue to do that with its commitment to public participation. Oregon has long exemplified the idea that the best environmental decisions are made by those who live with them, and Senate Bill 420 certainly furthers that goal. The health of our communities, from Sutherland to Pendleton, Astoria to Lakeview, is at the heart of environmental justice and at the heart of Senate Bill 420. This bill will promote collaborative, constructive participation in environmental policymaking. It is the cleaner, cheaper, and smarter alternative to litigation and leaves our communities and environment in much better shape. I urge you to pass to move this bill to the floor and to see it passed promptly. And if I may answer any questions, I'd like to wait until after my colleague and my partner, my husband, has had a chance to address.
Good morning. Robert Collin, senior research scholar. And
before you start,
yes, sir.
I apologize. Ms. Collin, we never got you to officially identify yourself on the record. So.
Oh, I thought I had done that.
By way of background, you did, but not in terms of a statement of your name.
My name is Robin Morris Collin, C-O-L-L-I-N.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Collin, please proceed.
And my name is a lot like that. Robert William Collin. And I'll be brief and to the point on three issues, how the money flows, how GJAB was inclusionary, and the principles of EJ. I wrote the first law review article in it. I can give you many things to help you sleep at night, but I think you have enough of that. The first thing are the principles, SIP, collaboration, inclusion, and speaking for ourselves. Every stakeholder, industry, community, government, speaking for themselves, not through an environmental defense fund, not through perhaps a trade group, speaking for themselves. The GJAB experience was that, and I was there when Governor Kitzhaber set it up, was that we were representing environmental justice, and we demanded industry be included. Environmentalists did not want that. They said they already have their own access, and we would not participate unless everyone was included, ranchers, industry, and Terry Witt was the person we selected to be included, who has experience with Dow Chemical and his background, and someone we could really use in this type of issue. So GJAB really was quite inclusionary, and it's awkward. It's not friendly all the time, and people learned a lot about each other with it. But we stuck together, and we ran a grant from EPA, Robin and I did, when we were at U of O Law School, and had hearings all across the state with it. It was really quite a fact-finding mission. The money, the federal government gives a lot of money to Region 10 of the EPA, for instance. And there's an executive order, 12898, that forces any recipient of that money to be accountable for that in terms of environmental justice terms. So they should be doing it anyway. It shouldn't cost that much. And the last point is that it just is really good precautionary policy to figure out what's out there before it develops into a big, huge lawsuit. It's preventative. The New Jersey statute, for instance, probably goes the farthest of any at the moment. It has actual decision-making power and can pull people on unwilling parties in front of it, semi-judicial almost. This isn't even close to that. We don't have that value in Oregon. And as I sat in the last committee and had heard all those peoples, and I was on the Lane County Planning Commission, and I've been in somewhat of a situation like you have, where people come in heartfelt with really basic concerns, but they don't want to sue anyone. They want to talk about it. This is that valve. This releases that steam. This assures that the federal revenue flow that continues to Oregon through Region 10, which is probably over $50 million, continues unimpeded in a good way, in a way that I think that will make cheaper, cleaner, and smarter public policy outside the courtrooms and in the communities where it belongs. Thank you.
May we answer any questions?
Yes, any questions? Representative Camardi.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Will this apply basically also to rural Oregon as well as metropolitan Oregon?
I would certainly hope so. I come from a rural area and hundreds of years of rural area and saw the demise of dairy farms in my family. And to me, I'm very concerned about rural areas because one technical reason is the Census Act does not disclose the population of areas where you can learn the income of the individual, so rural areas are much undercounted and therefore very much excluded, and that causes a problem. The other big transportation issue is Utah's nuclear waste dumps and the waste coming in from Tacoma down through I-84 through rural communities. It's toxic nuclear waste from Kobe, Japan right now going to the Deschutes area in Utah, and they need a route, and they're looking at Oregon, and it's rural communities. It's a path of least resistance. So this, as I've gone across the country and worked with communities, I've worked in urban areas, but a lot of them are rural areas. The leave-me-alone, sleepy communities that, until it's a big battle, they're not involved, and they want to be involved a little bit earlier. So in 1998, Governor Kitzhaber applied environmental justice to keep the gas stations open in rural areas because the leaking underground storage tank moratorium had ended, and it was, you know, cleaner to close up. You close up one in a rural area, as it sounds like you know, you have more people burning gas, driving to find gas, than you have saving gas. So we have applied it in rural areas, and when I taught environmental justice at U of O, I said Oak Ridge was an EJ community. You want to protect old growth? That's a benefit of the nation. The burden falls on that community. That's what EJ is about, benefit and burden. And so looking at burden, Oregon communities that suffer the brunt of interstates transit stop, waste transfer stations that become waste dumps before you know it. That's something that's an issue nationwide. So, yes.
I'd like an opportunity briefly to respond. Environmental justice communities began as an issue of racial and ethnic justice, but it certainly has not remained defined that way. And environmental justice communities do include, both under federal statute and under our previous experiences in Oregon, do include communities defined by poverty, affected by issues of poverty. They have included rural communities, communities with very different kinds of economic bases. And so while our initial remarks in terms of environmental justice did address racial and ethnic communities, you'll see that the proposal is for a much broader task force. And our experience has always been, since 1991, to include all of Oregon's communities.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. Interesting, because when we think of the poor, we do think of the metropolitan areas. And but yet, in part of my district, are some of the poorest communities in the state. And those folks need equal attention to their problems as well as those in the metropolitan area. So I'm very pleased to hear you say that this is applicable to all areas of Oregon that may be in need. So thank you for your response.
Thank you.
We have a couple more questions. Representative Dinkfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate you coming here today. And this is an issue. Actually, I worked on Superfund site in the Midwest for 5 years, so I know this issue very well as far as pertaining especially to hazardous waste and contaminating drinking water and land and low-income communities. The question I had is, you alluded to the predecessor under Kitzhaber,
yes,
the task force. Can you talk a little bit about what happened, you know, that sunsetted because of, was it lack of funding?
Yes, it was one of the sort of agreements that got it going was that some parties were comfortable with it sunsetting. And then the funding was not there at all. It went through the Emergency Financial Board at the end, and we resurrected it through a grant from U of O and ran it ourselves, you know, through that, just being down for the cause, I guess, and a little crazy for running that. But the interest was very high, but it opened some sores. There were issues of, you know, some communities were very unhappy with this site or that site, and people weren't comfortable with that, but that was not a reason that it was ever stopped. Many of us have kept in contact that we never would have met before. Terry Witt and I, he drove with us. We've chatted with him a lot, and normally in political terms we would be at different issues, different stances on it. As the agricultural right to know law expands and these types of issues flame up again, softer, gentler venues of communication and collaboration really are necessary. And that's how I see this board being a little bit different than the sort of exploratory board we set up under Governor Kitzhaber, where it was awkward to include everyone at the same table. We had to either include or walk, is what we said. And so we, you know, have other jobs, and so we would walk. But they said, no, we're going to include them, and we did it. And there was some environmental industry crossfire that EJ stays out of, with it. But nonetheless, there was great discussion. People came forward. We could have used more public notice. I mean, we were just two professors trying to do it statewide, so we had a small budget. I have a feeling that my spouse would like to say something. is that responsive?
Yes, that's very helpful. Thank you.
To tag on, I I think that the original GJAB, Governor's Environmental Justice Advisory Board, was formed with a mission of issuing a report, which they did do. And at that point, the raison d'etre for the board itself disappeared in a sense, although we had a lot of unfinished business at that time because the report simply established a factual predicate for a wide variety of environmental issues that had simply not been addressed, largely because these were not powerful communities. These were not powerful people. And the wonderful thing, as Bob was saying, about the initial work of the GJAB was to set up some relationships, to begin relationships from which discourse could develop. But that didn't get a chance to happen because after the report was issued, there was no further money. And as Bob mentioned, we provided basically reimbursement for our members to travel to the hearings through a grant that we ran as an academic grant, which also, by the way, helped us to publish our article called Communities Speaking for Themselves. And I'd be happy to provide a copy of that article for you. As Bob said, it's better than Sominex. Nevertheless, I think that was the reason in part for the sunset of the GJAB.
Thank you both. Thanks. Thank you both very much. Senator Nelson. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is really a good concept. Like I said, I'm going to have trouble supporting it just from the people that I've reached in Oregon Pendleton. In the last session or two sessions ago, we created the Office of Rural Policy, which brought a big community of rural folks together. And, maybe to include, most of Oregon is rural when you come right down to it. Jim Azaman has been the chair of that. What I heard this morning was that thing was going away. And I don't know if that's true or not, but until I find something out about that, I'm going to have a hard time saying, well, let's create a whole new commission. Well, we might include these rural people, but I was at a meeting in Pendleton last year where there's probably 400 people. We had a huge community, a lot of interest, and maybe it could be a combination of two things working. I don't know how this could work, but until we get to that point, I see this as just another board out there that's, has a noble cause, but is it really going to touch the people that really you talk about in the communities? Because I know the Office of Rural Policy, has touched people in the rural community. They've got them together, and they've got an action plan. I've been talking about water. One of the things they did at that conference was talk about how are we going to use water, conserve water, use it for our best benefit. They have a great action plan. So that's where I'm standing on this thing.
Mr. Cullen, if you would just briefly respond. And
yeah, I am upset to hear about no rural policy office, and it is very difficult to get a meeting of rural people together. It isn't a bus ride, right? It's very difficult. When we had our meetings in Pendleton, we had no problem getting people together. It was one of the few places where we actually got hydrologists and farm workers together, and the water issues are of concern to everyone there in the state. Klamath Falls is a national, almost international case study now. So without including rural issues, we won't have an environmental policy.
And may I simply say, this bill would help provide a gap bridge, a bridging of the gap. This is not a board that itself creates policy, unlike an Office of Rural Policy. This is a task force which will create an opportunity to participate, to be heard. And certainly, if it's true that the Office of Rural Policy is not going to continue to exist, this will, I think, provide an absolutely vital opportunity to be heard for rural people as well as others.
I have some questions about that.
Thank you both very much.
Thanks, Senator.
I wanted to indicate that we have two bills up this morning, so I'm trying to keep track of the time here. Mr. Capps and Mr. Mason, if you both come forward. Thank you.
Chair Devlin, distinguished members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lindsay Capps, Legislative Director for the Oregon Environmental Council, and I've come here today to express our support for SB 420. It is a very sad fact that in many communities, pollution and poverty really go hand in hand, and that both urban and rural communities bear the greatest burden of environmental hazards. And I think in supporting this bill today, what we're saying is that we believe all Oregonians have the right to equal environmental protection, safe and healthy living and working conditions, transportation options, and access to natural resources such as parks and open space. And all Oregonians should have equal access to decision-making about issues affecting the environment, and there ought to be equity in the enforcement of environmental laws and regulations. And so we believe this bill takes an important step forward in making sure that all levels of government in our state take these principles of environmental justice into consideration in their work in policymaking. And so we simply ask for your support for SB 420, and thank you for your time.
Please, you can identify yourself for the record.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, my name is James Mason. I am the office administrator for the Office of Multicultural Health, DHS Public Health Division. Wanted to express my office's strong support for the bill. Also, I'm here to read on behalf of Gail Shibley, who's the Office Administrator for the Office of Environmental and Public Health, a very brief statement. I'll try to read it as quickly as I can.
I'm not actually trying to hurry anyone, but I have some members that are going to have to leave in about 20 minutes. So
I'll be brief. She wanted me to state that the principle of environmental justice is supported throughout civil society. The concept has been affirmed at the local, state, national, and international levels. From the Oregon Environmental Council's report, A Healthy Albina, to then Governor Roberts' Environmental Justice Advisory Board, to then President Clinton's Executive Order 12898, to the Real Earth Summit. Environmental justice promotes not only the notion of a healthy and sustainable environment, but also the idea that all people should enjoy the same degree of protection from environmental and human health hazards. To achieve this goal, environmental justice requires that people, particularly those historically disenfranchised, have equal access to decision-making processes affecting the healthy environment in which people live, learn, work, and play. Senate Bill 420 is a progressive and important initiative to establish in Oregon law this principle of environmental justice, and DHS supports its passage. Even without statutory requirements, however, DHS and other state agencies have worked diligently for many years to improve the health and safety of all Oregonians in areas identified by the earlier Governor's Environmental Justice Advisory Board, including lead poisoning, air pollution, water pollution, workplace hazards. The Environmental Public Health Tracking Project, funded by a competitive federal grant and housed in the Office of Environmental Public Health, will further assist in this interagency collaboration by collecting, compiling, and analyzing the seemingly disparate data from many natural resource agencies. Environmental justice concerns are among the very top considerations for this work, and we're pleased our initial efforts have been recognized by community groups, our partner agencies, and even other states and federal governments. In fact, our work is touted as the national model in this area. Nonetheless, it is our responsibility as stewards of the public trust to ensure environmental justice goals are integrated into everything we do, working within and across the state agencies. Senate Bill 420 is a strong mandate to do just that, while also ensuring the communities we serve benefit from fair, equitable treatment and meaningful involvement. DHS has identified minimal fiscal impact and supports its passage, and on behalf of Gail Shibley, I want to thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you both very much. At this point, I will close the public hearing, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 420.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 420 to the full Ways and Means Committee with a Dukas recommendation.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Dallas, is there anything that you need to add at this point?
Well, for the record, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there is a modest fiscal from the governor's office. We can deal with it when we address the governor's office budget. There is no appropriation language in this bill, and the governor's office will be up for work sessions shortly.
Representative Farrar.
Mr. Chair, I will give a courtesy vote yes on this bill this morning, but I was unaware of the concerns of our rural areas until Senator Nelson mentioned this morning new developments. So I will hold and reserve, but I share his concerns. But I will give this a courtesy yes vote this morning.
And even though we're in work session, in deference to Senator Gordley, did you have something you wanted to add?
I do want to say this for the record, Mr. Chair, again, Avell Gordley. To my colleagues and good friend Senator Nelson and to Representative Girard, and particularly Senator Nelson, who knows my long history of working to bridge the gap between urban and rural communities in this legislative process, I make a personal commitment to both of you to work with you. I don't know the full story behind what may be happening with the Office of Rural Policy, but I will work with both of you and with the Governor's Office to address your issues and your concerns. I've spent a great deal of time over in Eastern Oregon, particularly with my colleague, Senator Ferrioli. Again, I'm hearing your concern this morning. I want you to know that I hear it and I feel it, and I will work with both of you. I make that pledge to you this morning.
Thank you, Senator Gordon. Representative Klem, then Representative Burley, and then we probably need to vote.
I'm pleased to support the bill. I do also share the concern. I spoke about it the other day in our caucus, actually, regarding the Office of Rural Policy. It's slated for deletion. It's within the governor's budget, which is exactly where the same $30,000 would come from, so I understand why you're tying the two together. I try and keep these things separate in my mind, but sometimes you just can't do that. I understand that. So I'm going to be continuing to work on getting that office refunded. Right now, Jim Azzamano is set to be basically done June 30th if we don't do something. I think that's a real problem. But to this policy, I think this is a good idea. I was really pleased to hear our colleague from U of O talk about the effect of in Oak Ridge, because it goes both ways. I grew up in Coos Bay, and it was not fair to have my schools and my life affected to preserve, you know, a national goal without a more ample case for taking care of people who were there. But now I represent Salem, and Salem is downwind of a big waste incinerator that I don't want to see getting into the business of importing other states' medical waste and blowing it into poor neighborhoods where they don't know how to get to a public hearing and defend themselves because they have two jobs. So I mean, I really think this needs to be balanced, but I do think it's an issue that needs additional attention, so I'm pleased to support it.
Representative Berlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The merits of the bill notwithstanding, I'm a little bit concerned about the modest fiscal impact. When I first met Louise Soliday, she was the governor's appointee to coordinate the Environmental Justice Office that he had created at that time. And I'm sure when Louise was on his staff, she was probably earning total compensation more than $87,000 a year. This bill has 14 natural resource agencies, each one of which is mandated by this bill to create a citizen advocate position. To the natural resource agencies are directed to assist the task force in the performance of its duties. So, again, the merits of the bill notwithstanding, I'm very concerned about the potential fiscal impact. I don't think this, what we've got before us, is realistic at all, and so for that reason I'll be opposing this bill.
Representative Dinkfelter.
I would just like to thank my senator for her tireless efforts in bringing this forward. I know it's been a decade at least of work, and I just want to say thank you, Senator, and look forward to working with you as we implement this important program.
We have a motion to recommend Senate Bill 420 to the full committee. Are there any objections? And Senator Nelson. Motion passes. Senator Gordley, will you carry to the full and to the Senate floor? Representative Dinkfelter, will you carry to the House?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also,
close that work session, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3244. Representative Reed, if you would come forward and ask if you'd give us sort of a...
Yes, briefly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3244 establishes a sustainability board within the Department of Administrative Services. It has a section in it which requires appointment of an executive director, you have before you a dash A3 amendment which eliminates that provision and therefore changes the fiscal dramatically to a non-fiscal. We have co-chair's approval to work with the dash A3 amendment.
Okay. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tobias Reed, state representative from District 27 in Beaverton. Here to give you a quick introduction to House Bill 3244. Some of you have already heard about this in the House Energy and Environment Committee, so I will be quick and leave you to your work. I introduced this because I'm a fan of the Sustainability Board and the work they're doing. You know the history, I suspect, of the board that it existed as a result of authorization from this body in 2001 and was allowed to sunset and then brought back as a result of an executive order from the governor. I think it's an important body. I think the work that they're doing is important, and I'd like it to exist with the authorization of the legislature and with some confidence that it will continue to exist. So that's the motivation for the bill. You've also heard from staff about the dash three amendments. Our original intent was to suggest that the board could come back in future sessions and make budget requests as part of the normal process, but we're interested in moving it forward, so fine with removing that provision. And again, I think the main point is simply to authorize and support the board's work, the best minds on the case, and with that, I think I will ask for your support and conclude.
Any questions of Representative Reed? Yes, Representative.
I'll make sure I got it right. So this exists now under executive order. The people who are called for the bill already exist and are already working in these towns.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clem, that's exactly right. It does not change the makeup of the board, those sorts of things. We're simply saying we'd like this to exist beyond the current administration, the current governor, and say collectively this is an important enough subject that we'd like the board to have the authorization to think long term and have productive and wide ranging conversations.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, as you've probably noted with your staff measure summary, I voted against this when it was before the House Energy and Environment Committee. And the reason for that was that Section 6, which establishes the staff position or positions, and Section 9, which said that Section 6 became operative July 1, 2009, in other words, the whole fiscal impact was being put off to another biennium. And it was for that reason that I opposed this amendment that would take all that language out. I appreciate very much the attention paid to that matter, and for that reason I will be supporting this bill.
Thank you, Representative Berlin. Any additional comments? Thank you very much, Representative Green.
Thank you.
I will close. Oh, I do have one. I will read. Good bill,
she
passed. Okay, I will close the public hearing. I will open a work session on House Bill 3244. Do we have a motion on the dash 3 amendments?
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3244A.
Okay, we have a motion to move the dash 3 amendments. Any discussion? Any objections?
Quick discussion. Thank you, Representative Reed, for being flexible. I appreciate it.
Any objections? Seeing none, motion passes. Do we have a motion to refer to the full committee?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3244A as amended with the dash 3 amendments to the full Ways and Means Committee with the due pass recommendation.
Okay. Any discussion?
I just would like to say thank you to Representative Reed for bringing this forward and for working on this committee amendments.
Representative Reed visited me a couple of months ago, and I wished him well.
He's done well.
It's done well. It's done very well.
Okay. And with no any additional discussion, any objections? None. Motion passes. Senator, let's see how I got to do this. Okay.
I'll carry it to the full.
Okay. Representative Nolan will carry it to the full.
And I'm sure Representative Reed would like to carry it on the House floor.
Yes, and Representative Reed will carry it on the House floor, and Senator Vaucan, will you carry it on the Senate floor?
I will. I'll carry it to full.
Thank you. And we will see everyone back here tomorrow morning.
Either way.
Or Representative Garrard wants to carry it to the full.
Oh, okay.
He's been missing the opportunity that...
Okay.
Representative Garrard, then, to the floor.
Thank you.
And I would state for the record tomorrow, I have not gotten clearances from the co-chairs to say this, but I do not believe we will be ready by tomorrow for the Department of Forestry. If that should change, I will try to make sure everybody is notified well in advance. But we will have other bills on the agenda tomorrow. So with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.